United by a common language, the visual influence of the UK suffragettes. In contrast to what was going on in the US, the suffrage movement in the United Kingdom distinguished itself early on by using the visual arts in a deliberate and organized way. Its use of visual art affected the tone and reach of the movement, both within and well beyond the UK's borders, particularly in the United States. One of the main forces driving the creation of visual art in the UK was the Artists' Suffrage League, ASL, an informal organization of professional women artists who worked to further the cause of women's suffrage. Their work sent powerful messages with bold statements in an easily legible visual language. Images such as Emily J. Harding's Convicts, Lunatics, and Women, figure 25, which shows a woman in a cap and gown caged along with both a socially outcast convict and lunatic, draws a clear distinction between the woman's virtue and dignity and the subhuman status of her companions. A placard in the foreground reads, "Convicts and lunatics have no vote for Parliament. Should all women be classed with these?" Near the woman's head is text indicating the woman's inner monologue. "It is time I got out of this place. Where shall I find the key?" The dehumanizing of criminals and lunatics is off-putting by modern standards, but would have been quite affecting and effective visual shorthand when the image was made in 1908. Other images produced by the ASL, most notably those by founder Mary Lowndes, used personifications of justice to make a similar point. In her Justice at the Door, figure 26, suffragists themselves are equated with the figure of justice, who is denied equal rights. The image uses text to strengthen the message. Blind Justice herself stands at the door of the House of Commons with the words, "Justice, at the door, I surely am not excluded," written under her feet. The imagery in all of these ASL posters is easily understood and had a powerful effect. Many of the ASL's illustrations were published in the British newspaper Votes for Women, which had a wide reach and thus tremendous potential to affect opinion. At its peak, the newspaper had a circulation of more than 30,000, including readers in the US. Another suffrage arts organization, the Suffrage Atelier, was formed just 2 years after the Artists' Suffrage League in 1909. It employed both professional and amateur artists. Paying them a percentage of the sales profits for their work allowed many women to gain a foothold in the professional arts world. Most of the atelier's work found its way onto postcards that circulated widely in the UK to support the movement. The atelier also produced posters, such as the 1913 What a Woman May Be, figure 27. The poster consists of two rows of five images. The top row, labeled What a Woman May Be and Yet Not Have the Vote, shows a distinguished row of women representing the following positions: mayor, nurse, mother, doctor or teacher, and factory hand. The lower row, headed with the words, "What a man may have been and yet not lose the vote," depicts five men of lesser positions: convict, lunatic, proprietor of white slaves, unfit for service, and drunkard. The message is straightforward and effective. Suffrage groups frequently held poster competitions, the winners of which were widely circulated. The subjects of these contests usually referenced current political debates in England. For example, Dora Meeson Coates won a poster contest in 1907 for her work Political Help. The image shows the wife of John Bull, the British equivalent of America's Uncle Sam, refusing to feed her children, who bear labels such as trade unions, until she herself has been fed. The familiar domestic scene, made into a scathing political metaphor, was easily understood and sent a message with a powerful emotional impact. Coates' image was one of seven British posters purchased by the National American Woman Suffrage Association, NAWSA, in 1911 for inclusion in its Woman's Journal, where they were reprinted and advertised for sale. Clearly, the suffrage movement in America was aware of the powerful visual imagery being generated across the Atlantic and sought to channel the power of these images into their own campaigns at home. The six other posters included in the Woman's Journal were just as potent as Coates, although they touched on different political messages and each used different visual language. Those six posters were Factory Acts by Emily Ford, What Sauce for the Gander is Sauce for the Goose by Mary Sargent Florence, Votes for Workers by W.F. Winter, Handicapped by Duncan Grant, Coming In with the Tide / Mrs. Paddington by Emily J. Harding Andrews, and Won't You Let Me Help You, John? By John Harvey Drew. Most of these images emphasize the absurdity and injustice of gender inequality, although they come at that message from distinct perspectives. Mary Sargent Florence's What Sauce for the Gander, figure 28, makes use of the popular expression about parody to make a point about women's rights. She depicts two geese in her illustration. One eats from a bowl marked Votes as it spurns the other goose from the bowl. Bringing a widely used expression into the context of women's suffrage and visually connecting it to the issue of votes helped to make it seem absurd that women were not permitted to vote. Duncan Grant's Handicapped, figure 29, takes another approach, calling attention to the tremendous injustice of inequality. He shows a woman doing the hard work of rowing a boat in the direction of the House of Parliament as a massive wave threatens to overtake her boat. Riding atop that same wave is a sailboat with a sail labeled Votes. Unlike the struggling woman, the man in the sailboat leans back nearly nonchalantly, trailing his hand in the water and letting the wind move his vote-advantaged boat toward the same destination. Grant graphically and dramatically renders the disparity in their positions. This poster was an enormously effective image in broadcasting a larger message about voting rights and inequality. Another affecting poster was Emily J. Harding Andrews' Coming In with the Tide, figure 30, which, rather than focusing on inequality, calls attention to the futility of fighting women's suffrage. Her image seems to say the battle is all but won for the suffragettes. An older, anti-suffrage woman stands at her front stoop, pointlessly sweeping the incoming tide away as it washes up against and floods her house. The tide here, of course, is women's suffrage, and the words women's suffrage, votes, and votes for women are stylistically used to create the wave patterns of the tide encroaching on the house. To drive the message home, a boat marked women's suffrage, carrying a group of young women, sails toward the older woman's house along with the rising tide. In contrast to the women on the sailboat, the older woman looks tired and desperate. The words, "coming in with the tide indeed, I'll soon stop their tide," pasted on the wall behind her. Andrews is yet another ASL artist who used art to suggest the absurdity of not allowing women to vote. Her image deftly communicated a powerful message in a visual format that took but an instant to read and understand. We know there was strong demand for these posters in the U.S. because after their initial publication in the Woman's Journal, NAWSA sold even more ASL posters in their national catalog that was published just a few years later. There is also evidence that these posters influenced public opinion. In the UK, restrictions were put into effect regulating which ASL images could be shown where, since they depicted a distinctly unflattering view of British government. There were other examples of art created in Britain beyond the seven initially sold by NAWSA that also had a lasting effect on the suffrage arts of the U.S. For example, Caroline Watts created her iconic image, the Bugler Girl, figure 31, for the ASL in 1908 to promote a suffrage rally. Her bugler became something of an emblem for women's suffrage, especially in the U.S., where artists borrowed from it. The moving image combines motifs from militaristic and classical art, creating an allegorical figure of liberty in the service of justice. Between the arrival of the seven ASL posters on American soil and the general profusion of suffrage imagery coming out of the UK in the first decade of the 20th century, the tenor of the women's suffrage movement in the US also began to change. As women continued to fight for suffrage, American artists built on their awareness of this new visual language and began to make more of their own striking images to use in the fight for the rights of American women. Soon, suffrage art was being created on a massive scale that amounted to an organized campaign of visual propaganda. Art was changing the way people viewed the issue of suffrage. And how could it not? Suffrage art so saturated American culture that it became almost unavoidable. As we'll see in the next section, the women's suffrage movement began to use the visual arts in almost every conceivable way, taking the debate out of the convention halls and protest rallies and bringing it into American women's private lives, even those less politically engaged. The spark of the movement was turning into a blaze.